around. I knew how to punch too. I put my whole weight behind that blow, and every ounce of my strength. Iron knuckles crunched into Reich's bull throat. I may not have been thinking with my head, but thankfully, some part of me hadn't abandoned all sense. Punching Reich's blunt face would have probably broken my fist and just tickled him a little. He gave a kind of grunt and stood there, looking slightly bewildered. I suppose the idea that I'd just committed suicide in such grand style took some getting used to. Somewhere in the back of my mind, it dawned on me that I'd made a very big mistake. The rest of me didn't much care. I think blind rage and the pure enjoyment of using Reich as a punchbag figured in equal measure. Since I'd been offered a second free blow, I took two. An iron-clad knee driven accurately into the groin will give pause for thought even to a seven-foot maniac who's twice your weight. Reich folded up obligingly, and I brought both fists down together on the back of his neck. I studied the fighting arts of the Nippon with Tutor Lundist. He brought a book on the subject with him from the utter east. Page upon rice paper page of fighting stances, kata moves, and anatomical diagrams to show the pressure points. I'm sure I hit the two stun points on the back of Reich's neck, and I know I hit hard. I blame him for being too stupid to know how they work. Reich swung at me. A lucky thing, because if he'd grappled me, he'd have twisted my head off in no time. His van brace caught my ribcage. I guess if I'd not been wearing that breastplate, all my ribs would have broken, rather than just the two. The force took me off my feet and sent me sliding among the bones. I fetched up against one of those pillars with a painful little clang. I could have drawn my sword then. It would have been the only sensible decision, against all the unwritten rules, of course. I started it with a punch, and that was the way the thing should have ended. But when you weigh a loss of face with the brothers against having Reich actually rip your face off, well, it's not a hard decision. I picked myself up. "Come here, you fat bastard!" The words emerged without a by your leave. The anger spoke for me, anger at having lost control. More now than anger at him calling the Nuban a coward. The Nuban didn't need Reich beaten bloody to prove his courage. Angry at being angry. There's a worm that will eat its tail, and no mistake. I should have a Ouroboros on my family crest. Reich rushed me with that wordless howl of his. He reached a fair clip. Not many castle doors would stop little Reichy at that speed. Pretty scary. Unless you know he can't turn corners. I stepped aside nice and sharp, cursing at my ribs. Reich hit the pillar and bounced off. To his credit, several bits of stone came loose. I picked up a good stout thigh bone and smacked him around the head with it as he tried to get up. The thing cracked almost in two, so I finished the job and had myself two knob-ended clubs. The single most depressing thing about fighting Reich would have to be the way he'd never stay down. He came at me, a bit woozy now, but snarling dire threats and meaning every one of them.
"Gonna feed you your own eyeballs, boy."
He spat out a tooth. I danced back and hit him in the face with the longer of my two clubs. He spat out another tooth at that. I had to laugh. The anger left me, and it felt good. Sir Reich lumbered after me, and I kept my distance, clouting him a good one when I could. The closest thing I can think of is bear baiting. Whack, growl, clang, snarl. I had the giggles, which was a bad thing, because one slip, and he really would have me. If he got just one of those paws of his on me and got a grip, well, I would be eating my own eyeballs. He did things like that. The brothers started to lay bets and clapped the sport.
"I'll pull your guts out!"
Reich seemed to have an endless supply of threats. Unfortunately, he seemed to have an endless supply of energy too, and my dancing days were coming to an end, my footwork getting a little clumsy.
"Break every little bone in that pretty face of yours, Jorgie."
Our circle took us back to where I threw the first blow.
"Pull those skinny arms out of their sockets."
He looked an evil sight, with blood spilling down his chin. I saw my chance. I ran straight at him. taking him by surprise yet again. In the long run, it promised to be a pushing contest as unequal as Reich against the pillar. But he gave a step. A step gave me all I'd hoped for. He hit Makin's legs, stumbled, and went over backward. I scooped up the Nuban's bow, and before Reich could get up, I was over him. I had the snout of the bow, a heavy iron falcon, poised over Reich's face. "What's it gonna be, little Reichy?" I asked. "I think I can crush your skull like an egg before you get your hands on me. Should we try it and see? Or do you want to take that back?" He gave me a blank look. "About the Nuban," I said. Reich had genuinely forgotten what he'd said. Doubt crinkled his brow. He tried to focus on the bow.
"I take it back."
"Christ bleeding!" I sagged, exhausted, clothed in sweat. The brothers surged round us then, a new life in them, paying their bets, reliving the moment when Reich charged the pillar. I made note of who backed me. Burlow, Liar, Grumlow, Kent. The older men who could look past youth. Makin even went so far as to get up off the floor. He clapped a hand to my shoulder. "You and the Nuban. You caught her." I nodded. "I hope she went to hell screaming," Makin said. "She died hard," I said. An easy lie. "The Nuban." Makin had to hunt for the words. "He was better than the rest of us." I didn't have to hunt. "Yes." Gorgoth hadn't stirred while I fought Reich. He sat on the cold stone, legs crossed under him. Here and there, the ghost flesh of skeletal fingers had marked his hide with dead spots, little white fingerprints where the flesh had died. He didn't move, but he watched me with those cat's eyes of his. A yard or two from Gorgoth, I could make out a small dark huddle. Gog and Magog clutched one to another. "A fine fight, lad," I called to Gog. "You were as good as your word." Gog lifted his face to me. Magog's head flopped back, rolling on a neck scored by white lines, dead white lines across his tiger stripes. I found myself kneeling beside them. Gog snarled when I touched his brother, but he didn't stop me. Magog felt so light in my hands, a curious mix of bony starvation and child softness. "Your brother," I said. For the longest moment, I had nothing else to say, as though my throat closed away all my words. So little. I remembered him scampering up those endless stairs. In the end, I had to press on my broken ribs to let the pain sharpen me and chase out the stupidity. I set the dead child down and stood. "You fought for him, Gog. Stupid. But maybe you'll find comfort in it. Maybe his reproach won't follow you the length of your days." "We have a new mascot," I announced to the brothers. "Gog here is now part of our merry band." Gorgoth started up at that.
"The necromancers."
I stepped in before he rose to his feet, the iron face of the Nuban's crossbow 3 inches from his ridged forehead. "What's it going to be, Gorgoth?" I asked. He sat himself back down. I turned away. "We burn the dead. I'm not having them come back to say hello."
"Burn them with what?"
Red Kent wanted to know.
"Bones is poor kindling, Jorth."
Elben hawked a wad of phlegm into the nearest pile, as if to prove his point. "We'll have us a bone fire even so," I said. "I saw a tar drip on my way back." So we took the bones to where the black stuff leaked slow and stinking from a crack in the builderstone, and daubed them one by one. We made a heap for Rodat and the others, and a little pyre for the Lucrota. Elben built it like the ones they fashion for kings in the Teuton lands. I set the fire with Makin's torch. "Good night, lads," I said. "Thieves and road scum, the lot of you. Tell the devil I said to take good care of you." I gave the torch to Gog. "Light it up. You don't want the necromancers playing with his bones." A heat came off the boy, as if a fire banked inside him had woken. any hotter, and he might light the pyre without the torch. He set the flame, and we backed off before the billowing smoke. Tar never burns clean, but I wasn't sorry for the veil it gave us. Gog gave me the torch back. The inky pools of his eyes held their secrets even tighter than the Nuban's did. But I could see something in there, a kind of pride. We made our way on. I let Burlo carry the Nuban's bow. A prince must exercise some privilege after all. We walked with our tarbone torches smoking, and Gorgoth at the fore to find the path. He showed us mile after mile of dull box chamber, square corridor, and low gallery. I guessed when the builders bought their hellfire from Lucifer, they must have paid for it with their imaginations. The great stair took me by surprise.
Here!
Gorgoth halted at a spot where a natural tunnel undercut the passage. The great stair proved to be less grand than I had imagined. No more than 10 yards across in any place I could see, and a squeeze at the entrance. At least it was natural, though. My eyes had ached for a curved line, and here I could rest them. Some ancient stream had carved a path down a fault line, stepping by leaps and bounds into the deep places. The waters, long since reduced to a trickle, dripped in a rocky gullet, as steep and twisting as a man could hope for.
"Seems we have a climb ahead of us," I said.
"These stairs are not for the living."
A necromancer insinuated himself into the narrow entrance, pulling himself from the shadows as though they clung like webs. He could have been a twin to the bitch that took the Nuban. "For Christ's sake!" I drew my sword and swung on a rising arc in the same motion. His head came off clean. I let the momentum carry me round and brought the blade down with all my strength, overhand on the pulsing stump of his neck. The blow caught him before he could fall and cut deep, splitting his sternum.
"I'm not interested,"
I shouted the words at his corpse as I let its weight pull me to the ground. As with so many things in life, the bringing of death is simply a matter of timing. I made the mistake of giving Chella a moment, and she took it. Jane should have told me just to attack her, nothing else. Just attack her. Forget running. I had in mind that if my reply to Chella's first words had been a well-judged sword blow, the Nuban might yet be standing with me. A savage twist on my sword hilt opened the necromancer's chest. I kept a little dagger in my boot, wicked sharp. I took it out, and whilst the brothers watched in silence, I cut out the necromancer's heart. The thing pulsed in my hand, warmish, lacking the heat of the living or the cold of the dead. His blood lacked a certain vitality too. When cutting out a heart, and I speak from experience here, expect to be crimson head to toe. The necromancer's blood looked purple in the torchlight, and barely reached past my elbows. "If any more of you bastards want to waste my time with stupid melodrama, please form an orderly queue." I let my voice echo down the corridors. The Nuban once told me about a tribe in Nuba that ate the heart and the brains of their enemies. They thought it gave them their foes strength and cunning. I never saw the Nuban do it, but he didn't dismiss the idea. I held the heart up to my mouth.
"Prince!"
Makin stepped toward me.
"That's evil meat."
"There is no evil, Makin," I said. "There's the love of things, power, comfort, sex, and there's what men are willing to do to satisfy those lusts." I kicked the ruin of the necromancer's corpse. "You think these sad creatures are evil? You think we should fear them?" I took a bite, as big as I could manage. Raw flesh is chewy, but the necromancer's heart had some give in it, like a game bird hung until it's ready to drop off the hook. The bitter gall of the blood scoured my throat. I swallowed my mouthful, and it slid down, slow and sour. I think for the first time, Burlo watched me eat without the green eyes of jealousy. I threw the rest of it down. The brothers stood mute, eyes watering from the torch smoke. That's the problem with tar torches. You have to keep moving. I felt a touch odd. I had the feeling you get when you know you really should be somewhere else. as if you'd promised a duel that morning, or some such, but couldn't quite remember what it was. Chills ran up my back and along my arms, as if ghosts trailed their fingers over me. I opened my mouth, then closed it, interrupted by a whisper. I looked around. Whispers came from every corner, just at that maddening level where you can hear the words but not understand them. The brothers started to look around too, nervous. "Do you hear it?" I asked. "Hear what?" Makin said. The voices came louder, angry but indistinct, louder. A multitude advancing, louder. A faint breeze disturbed the air. "Time to climb, gentlemen." I wiped my hand across my mouth, scraping away purple muck on the back of my gauntlet. "Let's see how fast we can do this." I picked the necromancer's head from the floor, half expecting the eyes to roll down and fix me with a glare. "I think our heartless foe has friends coming," I said. "Lots of friends." Everyone likes to eat. One man marches on his stomach as much as an army does. Only Fat Burlow didn't much take to marching, and took too much to munching. And some of the brothers were apt to hold that against a man. Still, I had more time for old Burlow than I did for most of my roadkin. Of all of them, save Makin, he was the only one who owned to reading. Of course, he bore watching for that. There's a saying on the road: never trust a lettered man. Chapter 32. We ascended the great stair with the screams of ghosts rising beneath us. They say fear lends a man wings. None of the brothers flew up the stair, but the way they scrambled over the slickness of that rocky throat would teach a lizard plenty about climbing. I let them lead the way. It was as good a means as any to test the footing. Grumlow first, then Lyre and young Sim. Gog scrambled behind them, followed by Gorgoth. I guessed the Lucrota's accord with the necromancers might be somewhat broken. Makin was the last of them. He could feel the dead coming. I saw it in the pallor of his skin. He looked like a dead thing himself.
"Jorg, get up here, climb!"
He grabbed at my arm as he passed. I shook him off. I could see ghosts boiling along the tunnel toward us, others stepping from the walls.
"Jorg!"
Makin took my shoulders and pulled me toward the stair. He couldn't see them. I knew from the wild sweep of his gaze. His eyes never touched them. The closest of them looked to me like chalk drawings half erased, hanging in the air. Sketches of corpses, some naked, some clad in rags, or pieces of broken armor. A coldness came from them, reaching for my flesh, stealing warmth with invisible fingers. I laughed at them, not because I thought they had no power to harm me, but because they had. I laughed to show them what I cared for their threat. I laughed to hurt them, and they suffered for it. The taste of dead heart meat lingered at the back of my throat, and a dark power ran through me.
"Die!"
I shouted at them, spitting away the laughter. "A man should at least know how to stay dead." And they did, I think, as if my words held them to obey. Makin had me dragged away, nearly round the corner, but I saw the spirit stop. I saw pale flames light upon their limbs, the ghost of fire, and oh, the screaming. Even Makin heard it, like the scrape of nails on slate, cold wind on a migraine. We both ran then, close enough to flying. It was hours before we stopped, 1,000 feet or more up the stair. The downward tumble of the long-vanished river paused here, to scour out a bowl, set about with smaller sinkholes, and decorated with the frozen tracery of stone that graces the deep places of the world.
"Fuck it!"
Fat Burlow collapsed in a boneless heap and lay motionless. Red Kent sat back against a stalagmite, his face coloured to match his name. Close by, Elben spat into a sinkhole pool, then turned, wiping mucus from his wizened lips.
"Hey, you look like one of them blushes, Kent."
Kent gave him mean eyes.
"So?"
Makin hauled in a huge breath and tried again.
"So, Prince, we're climbing up, well and good. But if we keep on up, we're just going to reach the Castle Red."
Another breath. "A long climb in armor will do that for you. We might surprise the hell out of them, coming up out of their vaults. But we're still twice a dozen men against 900. I smiled. It's a dilemma, ain't it, Brother Macon? Can Jorg work the magic one more time? The brothers all had an eye on me now, all save Burlo. After that climb, he wouldn't turn his head for anything less than the second coming. I pulled myself to my feet and gave a little bow. That Jorg, that Prince Jorg, he's got a madness in him, a stranger to reason, a little in love with death, perhaps. Macon had a frown on him, worried, wanting me to shut up. I strode around them. Young Jorg, he's apt to throw it all away on a whim, gamble the Brotherhood on wild chance. But somehow, just somehow, it keeps turning out all right. I clapped a hand to Reiki's greasy head, and he gave me a bruised-faced scowl. Is it luck? I asked. Or some sort of royal magic?
900 of them blusters up there in the castle, Red Jorth.
Elben gestured at the ceiling with his thumb.
No way we can turn them out of there, not if we're 10 times the number.
The wisdom of age. And I crossed to Elben and threw an arm round his shoulders. Oh, my brothers. I may have given our priest away, but it sorrows me that your faith departs so swiftly on his heels. I steered Elben to the stair. I felt the tension in him as we neared the point where the floor fell away. He remembered the Watchmaster. I pointed up the stepped river course. That's where our path lies, old father. I let him go, and he drew in a sigh. Then I turned to face the brothers once again. Gorgoth watched me with his cat's eyes, Gog with strange fascination from behind a pillar of rock. Now, I'm thinking that I'll find what I'm looking for before we reach the undervaults of the Castle Red. I put a little iron in my voice. But if it turns out that we have to murder us a quiet path to Duke Merle's bedchamber, and I have to plant him on my sword like a puppet on a stick to get him to sign the place over to me. I swept my gaze across them, and even Burlo managed to look up. Then, I let my voice fill the chamber, and it echoed marvellously. Then, that is what you will fecking well do, and the first brother that doubts my fecking luck will be the first to leave this little family of ours. I left them in no doubt that such a parting would be ungentle. So we climbed again, and in time we left the great stair behind us, finding once more the box halls of the builders. Gorgoth's knowledge reached only to the stair's foot, so I led the way. Lines danced in my mind, rectangles, squares, precise corridors, all etched into scorched plastic. A turn there, a chamber on the left, and with sudden certainty, like one of Lundist's potions turning to crystal at the addition of the smallest grain, I knew where we were. I pictured the map and followed it. The builder's book sat in my pack, and I'd returned to its pages many times on our journey from the Falling Angel. No need to dig it out now. Let the brothers have their magic show. We came to a 5-way intersection. I put one hand to my forehead and let the other wander the air as if seeking our path. This way. We're close. An opening on the left, edged by the ancient rust stain of a long-vanished door. I paused and lit a new torch of tar and bone from the blackened stick of my old one. And here we are. With my best courtly flourish, I pointed the way, then stepped through. We entered an antechamber to the vault I sought from my map. The door that blocked the way from our chamber into the vault stood maybe 10 foot tall. A huge circular valve of gleaming steel, set about with rivets thick as my arm. Damned if I know what builder spells kept it from rusting away like the rest, but there it was, big, shiny, and implacably in my way.
So how you going to open that?
Reich's words came out mumbled. I'd mashed his lips up pretty good. I hadn't the slightest idea. I thought we could try knocking it down with your head. I named him Liar the day I put a knife through his hand. The knife came out, but the name stuck. He was a mean bit of gristle wrapped round bone. Truth might burn his tongue, but his looks didn't lie. Chapter 33
"Looks pretty solid to me," Makin said. I couldn't argue. I'd never seen anything more solid than that door. I could hardly even scratch it with my sword.
"So what's the plan?"
Red Kent stood with both hands on the hilts of his short swords. I held the gleaming wheel at the centre of the door and leaned back. The door loomed above me. It looked like silver, a king's ransom in silver.
"We could dig through," I said.
"Build a stone?"
Makin raised an eyebrow.
"Try anyway."
I released the wheel and pointed to Burlow, then Reich. "You two, start over there." They moved forward with shrugs. Reich reached the spot and kicked the wall. Burlow held his hands out before him and studied them with a speculative pout. I'd picked them for strength, not initiative.
"Makin, give them your flail. Row, let's put that warhammer of yours to good work."
Reich took the hammer in one hand and set to pounding on the wall. Burlow took a swing with the flail, nearly got both the spiked iron balls in his face as they bounced back.
"My money's on a wall," Makin said.
After 5 minutes, I could see we'd be there a while. The wall fell away not in chunks, but in scatters of pulverized stone. Even Reich's furious attack left only shallow scars. The brothers began to settle, leaning back against their packs. Lyre set to cleaning his nails with a small knife. Ro put down his lantern. Grumlow took out cards, and they hunkered down to play a hand. Lost most of their loot that way, Ro and Grumlow. And practice never made them better. Makin pulled out a stick of dried meat and set to chewing.
"We've a week's rations at most, Jorg."
He got the words out between swallows. I paced the room. I knew we weren't going to dig through. I'd given them makework to keep them quiet, or at least as quiet as men wielding hammers can be. Perhaps there's no way through. The thought gnawed at me, an unscratchable itch, refusing to let me rest. The hammering made the room ring. The noise struck at my ears. I walked the perimeter, trailing the point of my sword along the wall, deep in thought. No way through. Gog crouched in a corner and watched me with dark eyes. Where the brothers lay, I stepped over them, as though they were logs. As I passed by Lyre, I felt a change in the texture of the wall. It looked the same, but beneath my blade, it felt like neither stone nor metal.
"Gorgoth, I need your strength here, if you please."
I didn't look to see if he got up. I sheathed my sword and pulled the knife from my belt. Moving in close, I scratched at the strange patch and managed to score a line across the surface. It left me little wiser. Not wood.
"What?"
The torches threw Gorgoth's shadow over me.
"I hoped you could tell me," I said. "Or at least open it."
I struck my fist on the panel. It gave the faintest hint at some hollow behind. Gorgoth pushed past and felt out the edges. It was about a yard by half a yard. He struck it a blow that would have caved in an oak door. The panel hardly shook. But the edge on the left lifted ever so slightly. He set the three thick fingers of each hand to the edge, digging in with dark red talons. Beneath his scarred hide, the muscles seemed to fight each other, one surging over the next in a furious game of King of the Mountain. For the longest time, nothing happened. I watched him strain, then realized I'd forgotten to breathe. As I released my breath, something gave inside the wall. With a snap, and then a tortured groan, the panel came free. The empty cupboard behind it proved to be somewhat of an anticlimax.
"Jorg!"
The hammering had stopped. I turned to see Reich wiping sweat and dust from his face, and Burlow beckoning me over. I crossed the room slowly, though half of me wanted to run, and the other half not to go at all.
"Doesn't look like you're through yet, Burlow."
I shook my head in mock disappointment.
"Not going to be, neither."
Reich spat on the floor. Burlow brushed the dust from the shallow hole their labour had forged. Two twisted metal bars showed through. bedded in the builder stone.
"Reckon these run through the whole wall," he said.
My eyes strayed to the knife I held clenched in one fist. I have, on occasion, punished the messenger. There are few things more satisfying than taking out your frustrations upon the bearer of bad tidings. "Reckon they might at that," I pushed the words through gritted teeth. Quickly, before Fat Burlow could open his mouth again and earn himself the name Dead Burlow, I turned and went back to the secret compartment. Just enough space to hold a folded corpse. Empty save for dust. I drew my sword and reached in to check the back of the compartment. As I did, a strange chime sounded. External sensors malfunctioning. Biometrics offline. The voice came from the empty cupboard, the tone calm and reasonable. I looked to either side, then back to the space before me. The brothers looked up and started to get to their feet. "What language is that?" Makin asked. The others were looking for ghosts, but Makin always asked good questions. "Damned if I know." I knew a few languages, 6 fluent enough for conversation, and another 6 well enough to recognize when spoken. "Password?" The voice came again. I recognized that. "So you can speak Empire tongue, spirit?" I kept my sword raised, looking all around to find the speaker. "Show yourself." "State your name and password." Beneath the dust on the back wall of the compartment, I could see lights moving, like bright green worms. "Can you open that door?" I asked. "That information is classified. Do you have clearance?" "Yes." 4 foot of edge steel is clearance enough in my book. "State your name and password." "How long have you been trapped in there, spirit?" I asked. The brothers gathered around me, peering into the compartment. Makin made the sign of the cross. Red Kent fingered his charms. Lyre pulled his self-collected reliquary from beneath his mail shirt. A long moment passed while the green worms marched down the back wall, a flood of light beneath the dust. 1,111 years. "What's it going to take for you to open that door? Gold? Blood?" "Your name and password." "My name is Honoris Jorg Ancrath. My password is Divine Right. Now open the fucking door." "I don't recognize you." Something about the spirit's calmness infuriated me. If it had been visible, I'd have run it through right there and then. "You haven't recognized anything but the back of this panel for 1,100 years. I kicked the panel in question for emphasis and sent it skittering across the room. "You are not authorized for Chamber 12. I looked to the brothers for inspiration. A more blank sea of faces is hard to imagine. 1,100 years is a long time, I said. Wasn't it lonely there, in the dark, all those long years? I was alone. You were alone, and you could be again. We could wall you up, so you'd never be found. No. The tone remained calm, but there was something frenzied in the pattern of lights. Or we could set you free. I lowered my sword. There is no freedom. What do you want, then? No reply. I leaned into the compartment, far enough that I could set my fingers to the far wall. The surface beneath the dust felt glassy and cool. You were alone, I said, trammelled in the 1,000-year dark, with only memories for company. What had it witnessed, this ancient spirit, trapped by the builders? It had lived through the day of 1,000 suns. It had seen the end of the greatest empire, heard the scream of millions. My creator gave me awareness for a flexible and robust response to unforeseen situations, the spirit said. Awareness has proved to be a weakness in periods of prolonged isolation. Memory limitations become significant. Memories are dangerous things. You turn them over and over until you know every touch and corner, but still you'll find an edge to cut you. I looked into my own darkness. I knew what it was to be trapped and to watch ruination. Each day the memories weigh a little heavier. Each day they drag you down that bit further. You wind them round you, a single thread at a time, and you weave your own shroud. You build a cocoon, and in it madness grows. The lights pulsed beneath my fingers, ebbing and flowing to the beat of my voice.
You sit here with your yesterday's queuing at your shoulder. You listen to their reproach and curse those that gave you life.
Veins of light spread through the glass beneath my palm. Miniature lightning reaching across the wall. My hand tingled. I felt a moment of kinship.
I know what you want, I said. You want an end.
Yes. Open the door. The EM bolts failed over 600 years ago. The door is not locked. I drove my sword into the panel. The glass shattered, and a brilliant flash lit the compartment. I pushed on, through a softness yielding like flesh, and things that crunched and gave like the bones of birds. Something hit me in the chest, and I staggered back, caught by Makin. When I'd shaken the afterimages from my eyes, I could see my sword standing from the rear wall, smoking and blackened.
Open the damn door!
I shook Makin off.
But...
Burlo started. I cut through his objection.
It's not locked. Gorgoth, Reich, give it a decent pull. Burlo, get in there and make that lard work for us for once.
They did as I said, setting their bulk to the task. Well over 1,000 pounds of dumb muscle between them. For a moment, nothing happened. Another moment. And then, without the slightest whisper from the hinges, the massive door stole into motion. The road may go ever on, but we don't. We wear out. We break. Age makes different things of different men. It will harden some, sharpen them, to a point. Brother Elben has that toughness, like old leather. But in the end, the weakness comes, and the rot. Perhaps that's the fear behind his eyes. Like the salmon, he's been swimming upstream all his life. And he knows there's no shallows waiting for him, no still waters. Sometimes I think it would be kindness to make a swift end for Elben, before the fear eats up the man he was. Chapter 34.
What is this place?
Makin stood at the entrance with me. The vault stretched beyond sight. On the ceiling, ghost lights flickered into life, some obedient to the opening of the door, others struggling into wakefulness, tardy children late for the day's lesson. I could see little of the floor past the crush of treasures. No Hollander grainmaster owns a warehouse so well packed. To describe it fully would require all the vocabulary of shape and solid, so kindly furnished by Euclid and by Plato. Cylinders longer and wider than a man, and cubes a yard on each side. They stacked to scrape the builder stone above. And against the wall, cones and spheres in wire cradles, all skinned with dust. Row upon row, stack upon stack, marching beyond sight. It's an armory, I said.
Where are the weapons?
Wright came to join us from his struggles with the door. He wiped the sweat from his brow and spat into the dust.
Inside the boxes?
Makin rolled his eyes.
Let's get them open then,
Burlo said. He pulled a small crowbar from his belt. It never took much encouragement to set the brothers to looting.
Surely,
I waved him in. But open one at the back, please. They're all filled with poison. Burlo took a few steps into the vault before that sunk in.
Poison?
He turned round, slow-like.
The best the builders could make. Enough to poison the whole world, I said.
And this will help us how?
Makin asked.
We sneak into the Castle Red's kitchens and slip some in their soup. That's a plan for children's games, Jorg.
I let that slide. It was a fair question, and I didn't feel like falling out with Makin. These poisons can kill by a touch. They can kill through the air, I said. Makin put a hand to his face and drew it down in slow motion, pulling at his cheeks and lips.
How do you know this, Jorg? I looked at that old book of yours. There was nothing about this in there.
I stabbed a finger toward the piled weapons. These are the poisons of the builders. I pulled the builder's book from my belt. This is the map, and that, I pointed to Gorgoth, is the evidence of their potency. Him and the blushers of the Castle Red. I crossed to where Gorgoth leaned against the silvery mass of the door. If you were to search the depths of this vault, and I don't advise that you do, you'll find fissures where underground waters have found their way in and out. And where do these waters run? For a moment, I expected an answer. Then I remembered who my audience were. Where does water run? Still dumb looks and silence. Down! I put a hand to the deformed rib bones that reached out of Gorgoth's chest. He made a growl that would put a grizzly bear to shame, and the vibration of his ribs undercut it. Down to the valley, where, in the tiniest of doses, it makes monsters of men. And where did the water run from? I asked. Up? Makin, at least, was game to try. Up, I said. So our poison wafts up, and what hint escapes into the Castle Red paints the folk that live there. The blushers, an attractive lobster red. Which, my brothers, is what it says the stuff does in this here book, handed down through some thousand years to your own sweet Georgie. I spun away from Gorgoth, caught up in my display, and mindful of his fists. And these poisons, in their interesting boxes, can do all this when what we have is an ancient spill, washed over for 1,000 years. So all in all, Brother Burlow, it would be best not to open one with your crowbar, just yet. So, what will we do with them, Jorth?
Elbin came to lisp at my elbow.
Sounds like dirty work, no?
The dirtiest, old man. I clapped a hand to his shoulder. We're going to build a slow fire, bank it well, and run for our lives. The heat will crack open these marvellous toys, and the smoke will make a charnel house of the Castle Red.
Will it stop there?
Makin shot me a sharp glance. Maybe. I looked around at the brothers. Lyre, Roe, and Burlow. See to finding some fuel for our fire. Bones and tar, if you must.
Jorg, you said enough to poison a world, Makin said.
The world is already poisoned, Sir Makin, I said. Makin pursed his lips.
But this could spread. It could spill out over Geleth.
Burlow and the others stopped by the door and turned to watch us. My father asked for Geleth, I said. He did not specify the nature of its delivery. If I hand him a smoking ruin, he will thank me for it. By God, he will. Do you think there's a crime he would not countenance to secure his borders? Even one crime? Any single sin? Makin frowned. And if the fumes roll into Ankrath? That, I said, is a risk that I am prepared to accept. Makin turned from me, his hand on his sword hilt.
What?
I questioned his back, and my voice echoed in the builder's dusty vault. I spread my arms.
What?
And don't you dare speak to me of innocence. It is late in the day for Sir Makin of Trent to champion maids and babes in arms. My anger sprang from more than Makin's doubt. There are no innocents. There is success and there is failure. Who are you to tell me what can be risked? We weren't dealt a hand to win with in this game, but I will win, though it beggar heaven. The tirade left me breathless.
But it'd be so many, Jorth, Elbin said.
You'd think seeing me knife Brother Gemt not so many weeks earlier, over a far smaller dispute, would have taught them sense. But no.
One life or 10,000? I can't see the difference. It's a currency I don't understand.
I set my sword to Elbin's neck, drawing too quick for him to react. If I take your head once, is that less bad than taking it again, and then again? But I had no appetite for it. Somehow losing the Nuban had made what brothers I had left seem more worth keeping, scum though they were. I put the blade away. Brothers, I said. You know it's not like me to lose my temper. I'm out of sorts. Too long without sight of the sun, perhaps. Or maybe something I ate. Reich smirked at the reference to the necromancer's heart. You're right, Macon. To destroy more than the Castle Red would be wasteful. Macon turned to face me, hands together now. As you say, Prince Jorg. Little Reiki, get you just one of those wonderful toys. That one, like a giant's gonad, if you please. I pointed out the closest of the spheres. Don't drop it, mind. And have Gorgoth help out if it's as heavy as it looks. We'll take it up a little higher and set it cooking for the castle's breakfast. One should be enough. And we did. With hindsight, if all the detail were known, Macon's stand there in the builder's vault should be sufficient to wash the blood from his hands, to erase all his crimes, the cathedral at Wexton notwithstanding, and make of him a hero fit to stand beside any that may be found in legend. Given the swathe of death downwind of the Castle Red, it's clear that the drastic scaling down of my original plan saved the world from a rather unpleasant death. Or at least, delayed it. Chapter 35.
We should have seen something by now, Macon said.
I looked back over my shoulder. The ugly bulk of Mount Honus made a black fist against the sky. The Castle Red cradled in its grip. Behind us, the brothers straggled, a line of vagabonds laboring down the slope. This death walks softly, Macon, I said. An invisible hand with fatal fingers. I gave him a grin. Finding every babe in its crib. Distaste thinned Macon's thick lips.
Would you rather it were Reich that found them, or Roe?
I asked. I set a hand to his shoulder, gauntlet to breastplate, both smeared with the grey mud from our escape tunnel. He had it in his hair, too, drying on black curls. You seem troubled of late, old friend, I said. The past sins weigh so heavy that you're afraid to add more? I noticed that we stood nearly of a height, though Macon was a tall man. Another year's growth, and he'd be tilting his head to meet my gaze. Sometimes you almost fool me. You're that good, Jorg. He sounded weary. I could see the web of fine lines around the corners of his eyes. We're not old friends. A little over 3 years ago, you were 10. 10! Maybe we're friends. I can't tell. But old? No. And what is it that I'm so good at? I asked. He shrugged. Playing a role. Filling in for lost years with that intuition of yours. Replacing experience with genius. You think I have to be old to think with an old head? I asked. I think you need to have lived more to truly know a man's heart. You need to have made more transactions in life to know the worth of the coin you spend so freely. Macon turned to watch the column close on us. Wright came into view at the rear of the line, cresting a ridge, black against the dawn-pale sky. Behind him, the clouds ran out in ribbons, the dirty purple of a fresh bruise reaching for the west. Bandages on his upper arm and around his brow flapped in the breeze. Something tickled at me, the ghosts of whispers, colder than the wind. Macon turned to go. Wait! Screams now, the terror of those already dead. No sound came, but Mount Honus lifted, like a giant drawing breath. A light woke beneath the rock, bleeding incandescence through spreading fissures. In one moment, the mountain vanished, thrown at heaven in a spiraling inferno. And somewhere within that gyre, every stone of the Castle Red, from deepest vault to tower high. A brilliance took all glory from the morning, making a pale wash of the land. Reich became a flicker of shadow against the blinding sky. I felt the hot kiss of that distant fury, like sunburn on my cheeks. What burns so bright cannot endure. The light failed, leaving us in shadow, the kind of darkness that precedes a squall. I saw the storm's outriders, newborn ghosts, driven before the rage. I watched them sweep out across the land, like the ripple from a pond thrown stone. A grey ring where rock became dust, racing fast as thought. The sky rippled too, the ribbon cloud now whips for the cracking.
Dear jeez, you!
Makin left his mouth open, though he had no more words.
Run!
Burlow's shout sounded oddly mute.
Why?
I spread my arms to welcome the destruction. We had nowhere to run. I watched the brothers fall. Time ran slow, and the blood pulsed cold in my veins. Between two beats of my heart, the blast cut them all down. Reich first, lost beneath the grey maelstrom. A child before an ocean breaker. The hot wind took my feet. I felt the dead flow through me, and tasted the bitter gall of necromancer blood once more. For a time I floated, like smoke above the slaughter. I lay in nothing. I knew nothing. A peace, deeper than sleep. Until.
Oh. Bravo.
The voice cut into me, too close, and somehow familiar.
Now is the winter of our 100 war, made fearsome summer by this prodigal son.
His words flowed like rhyme and carried strange accents.
You maul Shakespeare worse than you abuse his mother tongue, Saracen.
This, a woman, velvet and rich. Just run.
He has woken a builder's son, and you make jokes.
A child spoke, a girl.
You're not dead yet, child, with the mountain levelled into the valley.
The woman sounded disappointed.
Forget the girl, Chella. Tell me, who stands behind this boy? Has Corian grown weary of Count Renner and taken a new piece to the board? Or has the silent sister shown her hand at last? Sages, I knew him.
She thinks to win the game with this half-grown child.
The woman laughed. And I knew her too. The necromancer.
I sent you to hell. With the Nuban's bolt through your heart, bitch.
I said.
What in Kali's ni-
He hears us.
She cut across him. Chella. I knew her voice. The only corpse ever to make me rise. I hunted for them, there in the smoke.
No, it's not possible, Sager said. Who stands behind you, boy?
I could find nothing in the swirl of blindness enfolding me.
Jorg?
A whisper at my ear. The girl again. The monster's glowing child.
Jane?
I whispered back, or thought I did. I couldn't feel my lips, or any other part of me.
The ether doesn't hide us, she said. We are the ether.
I thought on that for a moment.
Let me see you.
I willed it. I reached for them.
Let me see you.
Louder this time. And I painted their image on the smoke. Chella appeared first, lean and sensual, as I first met her. The coils of her body art spiraled from etheric wisps. Sagus next. He watched me with those mild eyes of his, wider and more still than millpools, as I cut his form from nothing. Jane stepped out beside him, her glow faint now, a mere glimmer beneath the skin. There were others, shapes in the mist, one darker than the rest, his shape half known, familiar.
I tried to see him, poured my will into it. The Nuban came to mind, the Nuban, the glimpse of my hand on a door, and the sensation of falling into space. Deja vu.
Who lends you this power, Jorg?
Chella smiled seduction at me. She stepped around me, a panther at play. I took it.
No. Sager shook his head. This game has played out too long for trickery. All the players are known. The Watchers, too.
He nodded toward Jane. I ignored him and kept my eyes on Chella.
I brought the mountain down on you.
And I am buried. What of it?
An edge of her true age crept into her voice.
Pray I never dig you out, I said.
I looked to Jane. So you're buried too? For a moment, her glow flickered, and I saw another Jane in her place. This one a broken thing, a rag doll held between shards of rock in some dark place where she alone gave light. Bones stood from her hip and shoulder, very white, traced with blood, black in the faint illumination. She turned her head a fraction, and those silver eyes met mine. She flickered again, whole once more, standing before me, free and unharmed. I don't understand. But I did.
Poor sweet Jane.
Chella circled the girl, never coming too close.
She'll die clean, I said. She's not afraid to go. She'll take that path you fear so much. Cling to carrion flesh and rot in the bowels of the earth if that's where cowardice keeps you.
Chella hissed, venom on her face, the wet flap of decay in her lungs. The smoke began to take her again, writhing around her in serpent coils.
Kill this one slow, Saracen.
She threw Sagus a hard look, and she was gone. I felt Jane at my side. The light had left her. Her skin held the color of fine ash when the fire has taken all there is to give. She spoke in a whisper.
Look after Gog for me, and Gorgoth. They're the last of the Lucrota.
The thought of Gorgoth needing a guardian brought sharp words to the tip of my tongue, but I swallowed them. I will. Maybe I even meant it. She took my hand.
You can win the victories you seek, Jorg. But only if you find better reasons to want them.
I felt a tingle of her power through my fingers.
Look to the lost years, Jorg. Look to the hand upon your shoulder. The strings that lead you.
Her grip fell away, and smoke coiled where she had been.
Don't come home again, Prince Jorg.
Sagus made his threat sound like fatherly advice.
If you start running now, I said, I might not catch you.
Corian.
He looked into the coiling ether behind me.
Don't send this boy against me.
It would go ill.
I reached for my sword, but he'd gone before I cleared scabbard. The smoke became bitter, catching at my throat, and I found myself coughing.
He's coming round,
I heard Makin's voice, as if from a great distance.
Give him more water,
I recognized Elbin's lisp. I struggled up, choking and spitting water.
God's whore!
A vast cloud, like the anvil of a thunderhead, stood where Mount Honus had been. I blinked and let Makin haul me to my feet.
You're not the only one to take a hard knock. He nodded across to where Gorgoth crouched a few yards off, with his back to us. I stumbled over,